The absolute prohibition of torture continues to be routinely challenged around the world, with a small number of states engaged in systematic torture practices and many others failing to tackle impunity for torture, and in some cases colluding in it. A panel discussion held by the IBA and the UN emphasised the importance of reaffirming torture as a human rights violation. On the panel were Zayd Raad Al Hussein, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Helena Kennedy QC, co-chair of the IBA Human Rights Institute, Juan Mendez, former UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, and Beatrice Mtetwa, a leading human rights lawyer in Zimbabwe. The UN High Commissioner began by outlining the failure of states to address torture and President Trump's support for the use of torture practices.
Well, it is very interesting when you see the data that emerges from the Committee Against Torture, which is a treaty body that examines the reports submitted by states. And you notice that a small number of states are thought to be torturing systematically. And then you have a larger number, quite a large number, where you have incidents of torture, individual acts of torture and inhuman treatment. And here we see a sort of a rather relaxed attitude toward pursuing impunity for those who are doing the torturing. They are slapped with administrative penalties. Very rarely do we see criminal charges leveraged. Then you see another category of countries, and this is growing, where you see repatriation or refoulement of individuals to countries that clearly sort of acquiesce to torture, and that's deeply disturbing and a growing trend. And then finally, we have many countries who don't do what they're required to do under the Convention Against Torture, and that is to provide the sort of rehabilitation and care that the victims of torture are required to, or they deserve. And so what you have, essentially, if you look at all the countries that are party to the convention, 162, it's very difficult to find one that abides by all the terms of the convention. Yet, very few, or maybe not a single country, will say that it tortures or has in the past said that it tortures openly. And the rather dramatic point that President Trump was saying is by not even going for euphemisms, but saying, you know, we want to do this or I want to do this, is that he's breaking almost a fundamental taboo. I mean, if you don't have shame, if there is no sense of shame, it's very difficult for us on the human rights side to actually make you change your mind, because basically you're immune to that sort of sense of pressure that we could bring to bear on you. And so we have to then work with the community that does feel shame and the community that we can turn around to bring the sorts of influence that we need to bear on someone like President Trump.
We see a larger number of heads of state and governments sort of use these rhetorical devices that have been used by President Trump in the context of torture during his campaign and soon aftermath, or for instance President Duterte of the Philippines when it comes to extrajudicial killings, and we have a growing number of leaders who feel that they can do so. The threat to the international legal order, to international law writ large, through these different channels is very real.
Helena Kennedy QC, co-chair of the IBA Human Rights Institute, discusses how states justify torture and the collusion of Western governments in torture practices.
If governments raise the temperature of fear around terrorism, around the fact that there's going to be a disintegration of our society because people are assaulting the fabric of society, your children are going to be at risk, your enemies are at the gate, then you can very easily, using that fear, persuade people that actually being cruel and vicious to other people is justifiable. One of the things that I feel is so shameful is that many Western democracies, in their efforts to secure intelligence and so on, they were justified in sending in questions to black sites where we knew that people were being detained. Democratic governments, security services, sending in questions to people, for people to be asked things, and the product of that to be sent back to be used by our intelligence services, and ultimately in processes that were quasi, legal, and there were efforts to use that kind of material. So the issue of torture feeds its way into the systems of, for example, Britain, but other countries that like to think of themselves as being profoundly democratic and committed to the rule of law. We have behaved in questionable ways ourselves, and we have to address some of that in our own jurisdictions, rather than just wagging our fingers at countries that do it, because we, in a way, are collusive in it.
Juan Mendez, former UN Special Rapporteur on torture, argues that torture does not work and is counterproductive.
Well, the question of whether torture works or not cannot be answered by just saying yes. Sometimes it doesn't work because it obtains a lot of information, a lot of it completely useless and false. And in the case of the United States, the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence report demonstrates, it looks like it demonstrates because we only know a summary of it, it has not been published in full, but the summary demonstrates that the majority of the good intelligence that the United States obtained in the fight against terrorism was not obtained under torture, and that the information obtained under torture did lead intelligence officials into wild goose chases and did not prevent anything from happening. It used to be until 2001 that we had a very universal condemnation of torture, and so countries that tortured denied it and did it in secret or used euphemisms and convinced their public that they weren't really torturing, they were only using enhanced interrogation techniques. Nowadays, because of the immoral leadership that some world leaders are using on this issue, the popular culture also conditions us, all of us, to think that, well, it's ugly, but it has to happen, it's impossible to eradicate it completely. Ultimately, I think in countries where the cycle of impunity has been broken, we see some encouraging results. I'm proud to say that in Argentina and in Chile, literally hundreds of people are serving time or being prosecuted for crimes committed during the military dictatorships. Even 30 years later, they are being prosecuted.
Offering a perspective from Zimbabwe, human rights lawyer Beatrice Metetwa highlights the major problem of impunity for torture.
But impunity actually is one of the great, biggest problems in torture, because torture is generally encouraged by those who are supposed to punish offenders. And in Zimbabwe, we know for a fact that torturers are rewarded for torture. They get access to state resources. They get promoted. I mean, I'm currently claiming damages in a case where one of the torturers is now occupying an even higher post than he did when he committed the torture. They are protected. They get legal representation from government attorneys. And they get rewarded, and prosecutions for torture simply do not happen. In fact, torture is not seen as an offense under our law. If you do go to court to claim damages from a civil perspective, even the courts look at it more as an assault. And when you try to explain to them to say, actually, torture is not assault, and you try to explain the difference between torture and assault, they absolutely do not understand that. It's very, very important that the advocacy side of torture is pursued with vigor, so that victims know that there is help somewhere, there are places to go, and that the torturers are themselves pursued in their personal capacity. Society must be made aware that torture is a crime. It should not be accepted.